This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
That brings us to 7:10. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And before we move on to our next story, just to look back at messages that we've been getting over the course of the show, really. So earlier on Inside Story, we were talking about affordable housing, accessible housing, and we've been asking you for your thoughts. Should affordable housing be a human right? But also, what are improvements you'd like to see made to our housing market? And we've got so many thoughts.
We do. So let's look at this from Eddie, who says four main factors here. The construction cost should be quite stable and competitive. System building and economies of scale should bring this down. The government should be involved to prevent speculation and to control that. The government should provide tax exemption for low-cost projects. And land price, it's an ultimate factor which requires government involvement in the form of a national register. Meanwhile, other thoughts, build and sell, the cost of finance ends up added to the price by the developer due to bridging loans. The new Strata Act does not allow the change of concept anymore. Upon the CCC, the Strata title is ready. The developer can't change use anymore, and the developer is at risk if the design isn't good.
So I can't pretend to be a property expert, but one thing that does come through in all of that, and which I do agree with, is that we do need more, a systemic look in terms of government policies. And just in terms of protection that's built in into the market, that, well, really, I can't say this enough, needs the government to take a look at.
Needs the government to take a look at, but also requires, I think, some form of balancing when it comes to the stakeholders. Because when it's done in consultation with developers, which obviously it has to, the question of money making inevitably enters the picture. And I think this idea of who's going to be advocating somewhat for balance or for the other side of it is also very important. So Benjamin is back, who earlier pointed out that this concept in an open market capitalist haven that Malaysia apparently is might not work. Benjamin is back to say affordable housing should be accompanied by strong anti-rental or resale policies to prevent homeowners from taking advantage of low prices to flip it or rent it out. It should also come with strong eligibility criteria. Good examples can be found in Singapore's HDB policies.
So the HDB policies are not without criticism, yeah, but I do agree largely that it is important to have, when we have affordable housing, there needs to be clear enforced policies on those not being taken advantage of. Because, yeah, it's true. It's pointless to build houses that are ostensibly for people to be able to afford, but then all they are a way for people to make money off of them.
We do also have Yahoo, who says, I would agree with low-cost housing, but I disagree with cost reduction. If this affordable housing policy is implemented, I wonder what does that mean for my efforts to make ends meet to feed the bank loans to purchase my first unaffordable house back in 2016 when the housing price was ceiling high. Will the policy compensate my effort when I purchase during the housing ceiling price? And the thing is, again, not an expert, but my initial thoughts around that are, I don't know how that would work in general with housing prices fluctuating freely outside of the policy, whether or not we are going to have to take those things into account as well if we start talking about compensation. Because ultimately, I think the question here is who's selling the house? If the government is selling the house and there are policies in place for that, then as a Malaysian citizen or just as a person buying a house from the government, you could make those kinds of arguments. But if it's from a developer, I really don't know how we could take into account all the fluctuations over the years.
I just wanted to close off this particular conversation with this. Well, we had Zen who called earlier, and they said, I agree that housing is a human right. We need to increase minimum wage off the B40. When we recap the price of this house, it would be more realistic. And that touches at I think the core of it, right? Like we do need to relook in a wider sense, what people are making, what they can afford and what the gaps are. And when we keep talking about affordable housing as a socialist policy, I think we kind of missed the point that actually what needs to be done is to take a few steps back.
Yes, and also that systems can change. I think that that's the other takeaway for me here is that, yeah, within our current system, perhaps there are issues with implementing this, but maybe the system itself then requires a little bit of an overhaul. I just wanted to quickly segue back to an earlier conversation. I think we have just enough time for it because someone else is a shop lot experience. So we started off our show talking about safety in the workplace, right? And asking you whether workplaces are safe. And there was some conversation about shop lots being not the best. And the memories I have of working in a shop lot. And Sarah is saying, here's an incredible experience in the early 90s. I was the first one going into the office located on the topmost floor of the famous SS2 three-story shop lot area. I couldn't believe my eyes. Water-drenched carpeting everywhere and the stomach-churning sight of a partially collapsed roof in one section of the office. It looked like a war zone due to extremely heavy rain the previous evening. It was unbelievable.
Oh, that sounds... I don't know if unbelievable is the word I would use. I would think of something more in the realm of awful or terrifying, or I'll never work there again.
In the water closet of the shop lot that I worked in, there was a corner of the ceiling that was rotting away and sagging.
Okay.
Just leaving that for everyone's, you know, because Sarah brought up stomach churning.
On that note, if you have thoughts on unsafe workplaces, what improvements would you like to see? Or on affordable housing, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll look at a woman who was fined 5,000 ringgit after pleading guilty to a charge of spreading fake news. We'll get into that after this, so keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. It is 7:17. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. So a woman has been fined 5,000 ringgit after pleading guilty to a charge of spreading fake news about COVID-19. And that comes under the emergency ordinance. So we find out more.
Yes. So this happened in the sessions court in Perlis yesterday, but it's in relation to an incident that happened last April, I believe. And she was charged with spreading fake news through specifically WhatsApp with a telephone number that was registered in her name. And the thing about it being A, under the emergency ordinance, and B, specific to this idea of fake news is important because there have, of course, been calls for the government to repeal the emergency regulation on fake news relating to COVID-19. It was, as you may remember, implemented without parliamentary approval. I wish we knew more about the case. At least based on what's being reported in the news, this is what we get. We don't actually know what the nature was of the message that was sent and the like, but I think this speaks to some of the concerns that people had right from the start when it came to how it is that this law might be used.
Yes, because definitions, right? What do you define as fake news? Is intent important? Who was it sent to? What the damage was? So lots of things to unpack in terms of how what this law is meant to do, but also how it's then enforced and who ends up then being at the end of that enforcement. And so, as you said, there have been plenty of calls for the ordinance to be repealed. But we thought we'd get into this particular case and what it might say. Do share your thoughts with us. Do you support the repealing of this ordinance on fake news relating to COVID-19? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to help us understand this better, we have joining us Malvin Koh, technology lawyer at Law Partnership. Malvin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
So the Perikatha National Government enacted the emergency ordinance in March, and that laid down these criminal offences relating to fake news on COVID-19. Since then, how have we seen this ordinance being carried out?
Thank you, Sharmila. So before we look into how the ordinance has been carried out or how it has been effected, I think it might be helpful for us to understand why the ordinance was enacted. So as a whole, the Emergency Essential Powers Ordinance 2021, it was gazetted in January 2021 by the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong, pursuant to powers granted to him under the federal constitution. So Clause 2B of Article 150 of the Federal Constitution gives the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong the power to promulgate ordinances to address certain circumstances where he thinks it's necessary for him to take immediate action. And the emergency ordinance was put into place to address things like security, economic and public order concerns, all arising from the pandemic. And looking into the specific emergency ordinance, which criminalizes spreading of fake news, which the housewife was charged under. So this is the Emergency Essential Powers Ordinance number 2/2021. What this emergency ordinance does is it criminalizes specific acts in relation to fake news. It covers spreading, but the emergency ordinance is very widely drafted in that it covers all kinds of spreading. So it covers creating, publishing, printing, distributing, or disseminating. So it covers all bases and also in all forms. It appears to cover either virtually or if it's in print as well. And it also criminalizes the act of providing financial assistance. So if you're giving financial assistance for the purpose of sharing fake news, it is also an offense under the ordinance.
And I'm just curious here, what kind of evidence would be required to prove the points that you're bringing up and to therefore take action against individuals?
Right. So the emergency ordinance defines fake news as any news, information, data or report which is either wholly or partly false. So it doesn't have to be completely false. It can even be a small part of it that's false, either relating to COVID or the proclamation of emergency itself. And the form that it can come in is it can be in a visual or audio recording and in any form capable of suggesting words or ideas. So again, it's so widely drafted. Anything that can propagate a suggestion or a school of thought or an idea is considered fake news.
So where does intent come into the picture? Does it matter whether a person inadvertently or purposefully spreads this fake news?
Right. So based on those who have been charged, it appears that the court is focused on the outcome of the act itself. So if you're causing fear and alarm to the public, your act has caused fear or alarm to the public, it's considered an offense. So Section 4 of the ordinance clearly states that, you know, any with intent to cause fear or alarm to the public. So intent is expressly provided. However, it also says to cause or likely to cause. So even mere likelihood, which is a very low threshold, is also, intent is not necessary.
Now, how important, in your opinion, is it for the government to be transparent about about these charges and what led up to them, I suppose?
I would say it's very critical for them to be transparent. Two reasons. One being the ordinance was put into place as a form of deterrent. So to stop people from spreading fake news about COVID. And so people are aware that, you know, sharing fake news about COVID is an offense. But bigger picture, it also acts as a form of check and balance to ensure that the ordinance is not being misused, that the due processes of the law are being followed, that investigations are being carried out.
Is it possible to evaluate how effective this ordinance has been at preventing the spread of disinformation?
Right. So the Royal Malaysian Police have actually made a statement stating that they've gone from 24 cases of fake news per month. They're now down to 7 cases of fake news per month, which is quite a significant reduction, I would think. So while I would think that it's impossible to completely stop the spread of fake news, it appears that the intent behind the ordinance is to an extent helping curb the spread of fake news.
So in closing then, we've heard civil society groups from the very beginning calling for this ordinance to be repealed. What are the main concerns really that are tied to it and how it's applied?
So the main concern arising from this ordinance is that, you know, it's said to be an attempt to revive the Anti-Fake News Act 2018. This act was enacted just before the elections in 2018, when the former Prime Minister Najib Razak, he was involved in the 1MDB corruption scandal. And the sentiment then was that this act was put into place to quell any unwelcome reports. The act was then repealed late 2019. So it's said that this emergency ordinance is an attempt to revive the Anti-Fake News Act. And some schools of thought also think that, you know, it goes against the spirit of freedom of opinion, freedom of speech. This is enshrined in the federal constitution.
Alvin, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Shamila. It was a pleasure.
That was Malvin Koh, technology lawyer at Law Partnership, weighing in on the emergency ordinance on fake news about COVID-19 and more generally about the function of that ordinance. Do share your thoughts with us. What do you make of this ordinance? Should it be repealed? You can call 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, coming up after the 7:30 news, a change of pace. We're going to be looking at games on screen and all the different ways in which that can manifest. That's coming up on our Popcorn Culture Supercut. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.